When small evil goes unchallenged, like voter intimidations by the new Black Panthers in Philadelphia, more follows. The very same group stopped white voters from expressing constitutional rights, then later had a member who decided to deny life and liberty to white cops during a Black Lives Matter march. So are the new Black Panthers a special group under their own rules, or a paramilitary organization designed to take down the United States? Unfortunately, many leftist politicians gave aid and support to the idea that cops are racist, that America is wrong, that whites are evil. With such leadership, you have to ask, what is the goal of this current administration and these leaders? For example, after a Black man was shot by police, and without even bothering to fact find, the Minnesota governor asked, would this have happened if the driver and passenger were white? I don't think it would have. So I'm forced to confront, and I think all of us in Minnesota are forced to confront, that this kind of racism exists. Now, can you be imagine being a cop who works in Minnesota? And Obama said police, quote, acted stupidly, arresting a Black man. And then of a shooting victim, he said, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. Michael Brown was shot and killed in the process of assaulting a cop and trying to take his gun away. And Obama said of him, Brown's death, quote, stains the heart of Black children. When Freddie Gray died in custody of Black police officers under a Black police chief in a city governed by a Black mayor, Obama still said this: this is not new, and we shouldn't pretend that it's new. There are problems and challenges when it comes to how policing and our laws are applied in certain communities, and we have to pay attention to it. Now, for these latest two incidents, Obama said these fatal shootings are not isolated incidents. They are symptomatic of the broader challenges within our criminal justice system, the racial disparities that appear across the system year after year. And you wonder why people are blaming Obama for making things worse. Now, can we be surprised that these so-called new Black Panthers want their own country inside America? Babu Amawali, the so-called National Minister of Defense for the People's New Black Panther Party, stated, quote, the end game is land ownership. The end game is our own government and a nation within a nation. Okay. So we claim the states of Louisiana, we claim the states of Mississippi, we claim the states of South Carolina, we claim the states of Alabama, and we claim the states of Georgia. We just need to start migrating back to those states and taking control of the economics in those states. People move in, most definitely white people will move out, so it's not a hard process for us to have our own country within a country. And need I add that the gentleman who was the shooter in Dallas was a member of the new Black Panthers, and I've got a show detailing in part this today, but pretty amazing stuff. 523-1450 on the Kelly O'Connell Show. Good morning at 6:09. Really found out a lot of stuff over the weekend for you for this show, and I am somewhat shocked at what I found out, but I shouldn't have been. First of all, would you be surprised to find out Black Lives Matter was started by three community organizers? Would you be surprised if the new Black Panthers, the same group that they refused to ask to be sentenced after they were already convicted and the case was therefore thrown out in Philadelphia, that same group is the group behind, as far as we can tell, the shooting in Dallas, or at least a group that's been calling for shooting? And this shooter was part of this group. And so you can't say that none of this had an effect on him. Here's the El Paso police chief, Greg Allen, talking after this Dallas shooting about Black Lives Matter. It's a radical hate group.
Again, you'll have to ask the Dallas Police Department about that.
But do you see that kind of remaking any of the guidelines for that type of
dynamic situations than the one that you saw in Dallas are creative, and they have to be dealt with in a creative way?
What was your message to your
I can't hear you.
What was your message to your officers this morning?
That's between myself and my officers.
There's a vigil coming up this Sunday at San Jacinto Plaza. Does the department have any special plans on?
I'm not revealing that information.
Are you aware of the vigil?
Yes, we are.
What do you have to say to people who will be protesting out there on Sunday, Black Lives Matter people? What do you have to say to them?
Black Lives Matter, as far as I'm concerned, is a radical hate group. And for that purpose alone, I think the leadership of this country needs to look a little bit harder at that particular group. The consequences of what we saw in Dallas is due to their efforts. Any other questions?
Do you foresee this changing any way that you police our streets here in the future?
No. Any other questions?
Have you had any communication with community members?
No.
All right, so that's the police chief of El Paso who happens to be black. So saying that the Black Lives Matter is a radical hate group. All right, so I did a research on the history of the Black Lives Matter movement, found out that they were started by community organizers, and one of which was caught off camera, well, thinking she was off camera, saying that she was absolutely thrilled when she saw riots, and she said it was a beautiful thing. And so when I tell you that this is all part of a bigger plan, you can be sure that it is, that when unrest starts in the country, the result can be, in many, many countries, is revolution. If you go and study the new Black Panthers and find out what they base themselves on, they base themselves on, of course, the old Black Panthers, the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King and all these. But they also have within them the ideals of the Black Power movement and the Pan-African movement and black nationalism, which I'm going to tell you all about. It's fascinating stuff. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Sharon. Good morning.
Good morning, Sharon. How you doing?
Good. Thank you, sir. One of the things that really did surprise me, and I'm not really sure why it did this weekend, I don't know if you were watching any of the morning shows, but they had a former Philadelphia police chief. He had been tapped by President Obama to run do a study or be a group leader or something for policing, the methods of policing in America.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that I heard him say was that the problem is that we have too many locally controlled police departments, and that we need more centralized policing. And I thought, oh my God,
of course,
that does not sound like a good idea to me. And that's exactly what we're seeing with the Justice Department taking any excuse to come in. I can imagine, you know, I was glad to hear this El Paso police chief speak like that. He's already getting a ton of blowback. And, you know, I can see that the Justice Department might say, well, maybe we ought to look into what's going on in the El Paso Police Department. And here they come.
I mean, El Paso has one of the safest cities in America, which is astounding when you see that you understand that Juarez for years was the most dangerous city in the world. But, you know, this this movement, and don't forget, you know, the president gets up and says, what, after the Dallas thing, you know, we feel bad about this, and by the way, we need to ban guns. I mean, the guy is 100%
exactly
political. The next day, he was with what's-his-face in Britain laughing his rear end off. He doesn't ever seem to be affected by anything. And I went back and looked at that video where he was squeezing a tear out, asking for gun, you know, to change the gun laws, and I found it really bizarre. Because I don't see him as that kind of a person. I don't see him as an individual who cares about other people. He cares about power. But, you know, I was reading the comments, and everybody in there was saying he was coked out of his mind and everything. But it was really surreal to see him crying. And I just thought, I mean, this guy's a sociopath or something. He's just so hard to understand. The only way to understand him is within the context of a movement, a radical movement to overturn the authority system in America and bring it closer to socialism and, you know, world, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you have to work very hard to look at his life and say that that certainly is his foundational. Those are his foundational principles, you know? And I mean, you know, nobody should be surprised. We have nobody to blame, but, well, I didn't vote for him, but you know, he made it quite clear. And, you know, he and his wife made it quite clear where they stood, and, all we saw was the color of his skin rather than what he was saying. You know, we have to, you know, vote for this man. This is historic, and we have to show that we're not racist. Well, I believe he is a racist, but, you know.
We were supposed to prove that we weren't racist, but I don't know. I mean, these people, if you were to stick them all in a group and got rid of their, you know, titles and everything, and it was Hillary and Bill Clinton and Barack and his wife and all these other people that are with them, their beliefs wouldn't really be that far from one another.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. Anyway, have a great day,
Thanks.
Kelly.
Thanks for the call. Good call. Bye. All right. Okay. So, folks, I've got one little clip here for you. New Black Panther threat. Man, I've got so much stuff. I'm not going to be able to get it all on, but I wanted to give you a background in this so you can understand that the Black Lives Matter movement was started by three community organizers, and one of them was filmed saying that when she saw a riot associated with it, she thought it was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen. Remember when I told you that revolution is the engine of Marxism, of change, and that's what these people have in their hearts, and it's very scary. When you think about how many people died in the name of Marxism, I mean, you talk about the problems that they had, you know, the biggest problem in history, according to atheist agnostics in Christianity, is the Crusades and the Inquisition. You know how many people died in the Inquisition? Something like 20,000. There were 20,000 people killed in a day by the Marxists. They killed something like 200 million people in the last century. And there's also, that's a political religion. There's also a religion associated with this Black Power movement that's very interesting. Here's just a little bit. Well, let's take a break and I'll come back. Here is Wes Montgomery, kind of working our way through the greatest jazz albums in history, the incredible jazz guitar of Wes Montgomery. Really a beautiful and probably the best guitar player of the 20th century, if you want to get down to tone and interpretation and just playing ability, jazz ability, Wes Montgomery. 618 Kelly O'Connell, 523 1450 and 805-6180 to text in. AM Las Cruces will be right back to find out what the threat is with the new Black Power movement and their demand to be given states to start a new country in America at the end of a gun. All right, so I decided, but before we get into this black nationalism, this new Black Panther movement, I wanted to do some research and see if it's true, as Black Lives Matter claims. Okay, stick this in your back pocket. Black nationalism and black Pan-Africanism, two words that are big in this discussion, or two phrases. Black nationalism says basically we need to build a black state inside of America, an apartheid state, basically, believe it or not, so that they can have their own laws, their own police, their own justice, basically, to protect themselves and have their own economic standing. Now, Pan-Africanism says, let's return black people to their native lands so that they can live outside of racism. And so that movement was led by a Jamaican guy. Very interesting guy. But anyway, so as those movements faded and groups like the Black Panthers grew up, which were into the civil rights and somewhat involved in violence, and then they kind of faded as, you know, as arguably life became a lot less racist in America. Now we're returning to all of these things with a vengeance. But I decided to look into this. And the question is, are black people more at risk? Are they much more likely to be shot than white people? And the answer to this is kind of interesting, and I'm taking this from InfoWars. And this is something that's coming up again and again. All right, so this is maybe a little bit hard to take because we have this belief, part of our national religion is the belief that all races are equal, and we treat all races as equal. We treat all religions as equal. But the crime statistics in the black community are higher. Now, what would I ascribe that to? Not obviously not genetic. It's, in my opinion, it has to do with the fact that the fathers have left the black community. 75%, about 73-75% of black kids are born outside of wedlock. In addition, over 90% of black kids will live without a male figure in the home at some point because the rate of black divorce is higher. So, all right. But anyway, this is from InfoWars. That's how I understand this, is that you don't have a father in the home. And this is opposed to the idea that mothers and fathers fulfill the same role, which is another part of our national religion. It doesn't matter, you know, as long as you have an adult in your home. So anyway, from InfoWars, black people in the United States are more likely to be victims of violent confrontations with police officers than whites because they commit more violent crimes than whites do per capita. And despite making up just 13% of the population, blacks commit about half of the homicides in the United States, according to Department of Justice statistics, showing that between 1980 and 2008, blacks committed 52% of homicides compared to 45% of homicides committed by whites. So 13% of the population, and whites are, I don't know, 70% of the population. More facts. From 2011 to 2013, 38% of people arrested for murder, manslaughter, rape, robbery, aggravated assault were black. This figure is three times higher than the 13% black population. When you account for the fact that black males age 15 to 34 who are around three, listen to this. Black males between the ages of 15 to 34, which are about the population, are responsible for the vast majority of these crimes. It's absolutely staggering. And 523-1450. If you call in, if you got a beef with us, call up and let's get it on, because I'd love to hear your analysis of this. But these are the facts that I'm able to find. Despite the fact that black people commit an equal or greater number of violent crimes than whites, whites are almost twice as likely to be killed by police officers. According to data from the Center for Disease Control, between 1999 and 2011, 2,151 whites died as a result of being shot by police compared to 1,130 blacks. So critics argue that black people are overrepresented in these figures because they only represent 13% of the population, but they're underrepresented if you factor in violent crime offenders. In other words, you expect the number of blacks and whites killed by police to be roughly equal, given that they commit a roughly equal number of violent crimes, but that's not the case. Whites are nearly 100% more likely to be victims. Now, where is Black Lives Matter dealing with these facts? And you can say the facts are wrong. Or you can say that the facts are correct, but it's caused by institutional racism, which I think is part of the argument, that the entire society is racist. Or, you know, what's the other, you know, so, okay, here's another one. Despite being outnumbered by whites 5-1, blacks commit eight times more crimes against whites than vice versa. According to FBI statistics from 2007, a black male is 40 times as likely to assault a white person as the reverse. These figures also show interracial rape is almost exclusively black on white. James Q. Wilson, who is probably the most important social scientist in America during his times, wrote, even allowing for the existence of discrimination in the criminal justice system, the higher rates of crime among black Americans cannot be denied. Crime in human nature was his study, and he says every study of crime using official data shows blacks to be overrepresented among persons arrested, convicted, and imprisoned for street crimes. Okay, so then, okay, so think about that a little bit. And you can blame this on racism, but I'd like to hear how. I mean, if it's institutional racism, how would you fix it? You know? All right, let's take a little break here. I know this is controversial stuff, but at the same time, we've got to tap down into the arguments of the Black Lives Matter movement and the new Black Panthers and see if there's any truth there. If it is true that blacks are just, you know, kind of randomly pulled out of crowds and shot, pulled over, you know, forced off the road, blown away for no reason, then it's something we need to do something about. And I saw the two videos over the weekend. I still don't know enough about the one with the guy named Philo. You couldn't tell what happened beforehand, but from what I can tell from what the lady said, number one, pulled over. Number two, we didn't do anything wrong. Number three, he was cooperating. Number four, he was pulling out a wallet, although it wasn't his wallet. I found that strange when she said that. Number five, he had a card for a concealed weapon. Number six, he went to grab something in his pocket, and that's when he got shot. And this cop standing there holding the gun on him. I think what happened is the guy reached in his pocket and pulled out a gun. Now, he might have been pulling out a gun to say, I've got this gun, and, you know, it might have been just a total misunderstanding. But if you're a cop at a window of a car and someone either says they have a gun and starts fishing around in their pocket or pulls a gun out, what are you going to do? You know, and it was an Asian guy that shot him. And then she says, we didn't do anything wrong. We only had marijuana in the car. And I mean, and then I find out this guy gets pulled over 52 times in like the last 10 years for traffic stops. All right. The other guy, I saw a video from another angle. Two cops sitting on top of him or on top of him wrestling with him. He's a very, very big guy. Had to be 350 pounds. He looked like he was probably 6'5". They've got one hand. One cop has one hand. The other cop is trying to grab the other hand. And then the other cop suddenly shouts, he's got a gun. And then he says, if you make one move, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the guy keeps moving. The other cop starts shooting. I mean, that's what I saw. It seemed justified. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not trained as a cop, but I'm thinking if I'm a police officer and I'm on top of a guy who we've already been called out because a transient said that this guy pulled a gun on us and he's a felon. He's not supposed to have a gun. And the transient got in an argument with this guy and claims that the guy pulled out a gun and pointed it at his head. We're going to be very, very careful about the fact that there's a gun here. And then you're on top of him trying to arrest him. And, you know, all of a sudden, one of the two cops says he's got a gun, which means to me that he saw the gun. So anyway, most of these, there are some bad cops out there that are just shooting people on the street, like the kid that ran by and the cop in Chicago shot him and the mayor tried to cover it up. That's a bad cop. But I think most of these are misinterpreted through the lens of the media to create more and more anger and havoc out there because the media backs groups like Black Lives Matter. Because they're another leftist group. 633, we'll be right back. And I'll have some, we'll get into the new Black Panthers movement. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. Kelly O'Connell. All right, 6:37, and we're talking through this this shooting and the Black Lives Matter movement and New Black Panthers. And I decided I would track down some statistics for you so you could get a feel for whether the Black Lives Matter movement is accurately portraying what's happening out there. And so this is from Powerline Blog from July 2016. What was the racial breakdown of those who were shot by police in 2015? The largest number, 494, almost exactly half were white. 258 were black, 172 Hispanic, and the remaining 66 were other or unknown. The 258 blacks represented 26 of the total. Now, it's about double the population, exactly double the population in America of blacks. But now, does this prove that there is right racism? And it doesn't, according to Powerline Blog, because it's common knowledge that blacks have an unusually high rate of contact with the police, both as victims and as perpetrators. In 2012-2013, the Department of Justice found that blacks were the perpetrators of 24% of all violent crimes where the race of the perpetrator was known. And remember, that comes out of 3% of the population, ultimately, because it is for the vast majority, not black females, it's black males. And it's of the younger age groups. So the percentage of blacks fatally shot by police officers, 26%, is almost exactly equal to the percentage of blacks committing violent crimes, about 24%. Given that the black homicide rate is around 8 times the white rate, it's surprising that the proportion of blacks fatally shot by policemen is not higher. And all right, so according to the Washington Post, 80% of whites who were fatally shot by police officers in 2015 were in the midst of an attack on the policeman or someone else. According to the Post, 71% of blacks were shot while attacking someone, while 66% of others and 62% of Hispanics were shot while attacking policemen or somebody else. All right, so, and here is another article. Now, here, listen to this. And this is from the same Post database, and this is from amren.com. In 2005, officers killed 662 whites, Hispanics, and 258 blacks, like we just mentioned. All right, so the lower proportion of black deaths due to police shootings can be attributed to the black-on-black homicide rate. There were 6,095 black homicide deaths in 2014, most recent year available, compared to 5,397 homicide deaths for whites. So you've got more blacks being killed than whites, even though the white population is 5 times larger. According to FBI data, 40% of cop killers have been black. Officers are killed by blacks at a rate 2.5 times higher than the rate which blacks are killed by police. Think about that. All right, so I have a black friend that I was talking to last night, and we were talking about this and kind of arguing about it. And I said, you know, ultimately you've got to explain how policing intersects with the higher rate of crime in the black community. We've got a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is John.
Hey, John, good morning to you. Hope you're well. Thanks for the call. And what's on your mind?
I think Kelly should have been at that Chamber of Commerce meeting about guns the other day.
What happened? What happened at the meeting?
Well, it's in the newspaper. Don't you read the newspaper?
So anyway, do you have a point or would you like me to move on?
Do what?
Do you have a point? I'm sure you're not calling me up to quiz me. So what's your point?
Well, I think Kelly needs to get in.
All right, folks. Maybe John will get it together and call back. All right, so some may find the evidence of police bias in the fact that blacks make up 26% of police shooting victims, compared to 13% population. but according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, 62% of all robberies, this is out of the black community, 57% of murders, 45% of assaults in 75 of the largest U.S. counties in the United States, where they made up 15% of the population. So what I'm trying to say is that there is more to this story, and you've got to be, you know, willing to kind of dig down into it and see that, all right, so I don't know what happens in the training sessions or the conversations in police departments. I have no idea. But, and we know that officially racial profiling is wrong. But, I mean, if you know that there's a group of people out there that are much more likely to be violent or to commit crimes, are you going to bury that as a police officer, a person who's training police officers? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it's dealt with. But maybe it's just through the experience, or maybe it's just through the actual just – maybe it just plays out that way. Maybe it's just because there's more blacks are being involved in criminal activity, which you can call and claim to be a racist statistic, except these statistics are put out by the Justice Department from the period of time that Obama has been in leadership. So I'm sure he would have made sure that they weren't racist. And how do you deal with those facts? So anyway, that's the background. And that's how I would interpret Black Lives Matter, their claims. And we'll take a break and come back and hear about the new Black Panther Party. Hey, it's Kelly.
Yeah.
Who's this?
This is Bob.
Hey, what's up?
I wonder if all of the politicians in El Paso that are trying to keelhaul their police chief and the civic leaders that have the meeting here or support for the Black Lives Matter movement here in Las Cruces over the weekend will subscribe to the mantras of the Black Lives Matter movement, like hands up, don't shoot, why do we want dead cops when we want them now, and pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's an obvious impact of all of this stuff in the media, and part of the impact was that guy getting up on a roof and shooting cops, you know?
But if the people here are going to, here in El Paso, going to support the Black Lives Matter principles, you would think with the mantras that the Black Lives Matter people have established for themselves are not things that they would support. If they're going to have a group to support the supposed principles, they need to change the name of it. As long as they support the movement under the name of Black Lives Matter, then the mantras of killing cops is going to be part of what they supposedly believe in.
Because Black Lives Matter is connected to the new Black Panther movement.
Absolutely. So we want our leadership in Las Cruces and El Paso to support the new Black Panther Party, the mantras of the Black Lives Matter movement. Seems like they, a little bit of common sense would tell them they need to back off on that a little bit and think about what they're supporting.
Well, everything is going off of what's the latest thing in the media, you know? It's more than I've ever seen it.
So, yeah, so much for common sense.
Yeah. Hey, did you want to say that on the air or not?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the call, Bob.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. All right, so After Dallas, a black football player and an officer got into an online argument, and a black football player ended up going to the a cop's house and broke in, and he got shot and killed. So, you know, there's people out there who are able to, you know, listen to stuff and not be directed by it. Other people are very impressionable. And you've got the Black Lives Matter movement. I just got a phone call that's, you know, the guy said, well, you know, it seems like in El Paso, they want to bring Black Lives Matter on. Well, what does that mean? As far as I can tell, it means that somehow you're supporting this new Black Panther movement and black nationalism. And because it's not just saying that here's the thing, you've got to understand this. And I know that there are black people out there that don't agree with this. Everything is racist in America, you know, institutionalized racism. Now, do I know what it's like to be a black person in America? Of course not. Would I be willing to listen? Of course I would, because I want to find out the experiences of other people. But you can't argue that we haven't made huge strides since slavery was abolished. It would be absurd to say that, and that we're not trying. But the Black Lives Matter movement stands for the idea that America is fatally poisoned. Community organizers, just like the president, that's why I know that the president is on the same page with these people, divide and conquer. They want reparations. And, you know, some of these people, you might think it's nuts. They want to be given Georgia and South Carolina, these traditional, you know, slavery states, Mississippi. They want to be given the state. They want the white people to move out, and they want money. And they want their own private nation, and they want, inside of America, they want to be able to do all their trade with black people. I mean, you know, pardon me if I act like that's a crazy idea. And the other part, which you don't hear as much about anymore, black Pan-Africanism is returned to Africa. That's where the country Liberia came from, which is a total disaster. Oink, oink, bang, bang. Dozens of heavily armed new Black Panther activists threatened Texas police while protesting the death of Sandra Bland. Remember that? Remember Sandra Bland? Now, the president did not do anything to these Black Panthers when they were in Philadelphia and they were blocking the white people from voting. So what did that tell the Black Panthers? It told them they could do what they wanted. That's my impression. All right, here is a little bit on the new Black Panther threat from Fox News.
Tonight, threats of violence have police on high alert, not just in Dallas, but in cities across the country. Joining me now, attorney and former United States Department of Justice official J. Christian Adams. Good evening, Jay. I'm going to cut right to it. You wrote an article that's in pjmedia.com, a video on Breitbart, and the name of it is The Obama Justice Department Laughed Off Armed New Black Panther Threat. Now, very quickly, what is the connection between the shooter, whose name I'm not going to say, in Dallas, and the new Black Panthers? Is he a member of that organization?
Yes, he is a member of the new Black Panther Party. He was active in the Houston chapter of the new Black Panthers.
Okay, and the Houston chapter identified him as a member after he died. Is that correct? Do we have a picture, guys, of him?
Correct. He was identified by Quanell X, who was the head of the Houston Black Panther
chapter. As a member of the new Black Panthers. I guess we don't have that photo. Let me ask you this then. What is the connection between this new Black Panther organization and your work in the Justice Department in 2009?
Well, remember, the new Black Panther Party was the defendant in a voter intimidation lawsuit arising out of the 2008 election with two Black Panthers with a nightstick. I brought that case to DOJ. We got a default. The Obama DOJ eventually dismissed the charges against the party itself. The point is that this is a violent, anti-Semitic, anti-white group that has been calling for the murder of cops for years. It's not new.
All right. And what is the connection to Dallas then? So there was this you know, voter rights issue. And I think we have some full screens of that, guys? Some of the Black Panthers, the charges that were brought by the Justice Department, they were standing outside voting areas with bats. Is that correct?
Yeah, Philadelphia polling place.
All right, that's not what I was asking for, guys. Thanks. And so tell me about what the connection is between the two and why you think the Justice Department, as you say, laughed off this organization.
Well, you have to remember, Judge Jeanine, that the people in the Justice Department, the Obama Justice Department, don't want to hear about violent, black, radical, Nation of Islam-style murderers. They don't want to hear about the new Black Panthers. When we had that case in Philadelphia, we brought to the attention of top Justice Department officials, low Justice Department officials, every Justice Department official, these threats to kill police officers. There's a video up at the PJ Media story called Training Day, where they talk about lying in wait, teaching people how to hide behind bushes, shoot cops with AK-47s. This was brought to the attention of the people at the Obama Justice Department, but they didn't take it seriously. They didn't think it was a serious concern.
But the case itself, forget about warning them about the danger of this new Black Panther Party and the new Black Panther threat, but the voting rights case where, and unfortunately, I guess we don't have it, but there were bats, and I remember this Justice Department bringing this lawsuit. They were intimidating Republicans and other voters.
Well, look, that was the opening salvo of the problem with the new Black Panthers, where America learned more about them. I thought the case was good. The Obama political people dismissed the case. That was 5 or 6 years ago. The point is that this group has been active and violent and ignored by the left, by the Clinton, by the Obama people, by top Justice Department officials. They didn't take them seriously. That's the bottom line. They've known they've wanted to kill cops. They've known for years they've been violent. This guy was a member of the New Black Panthers, and he killed cops.
All right. And so now, how big is this organization? Do we have any idea? And you know, what is the future in terms of, you know, how they're accessing their, you know, their followers?
Well, look, how big is it? All you need is one, apparently, in Dallas. But It's all over the country. It's in Philadelphia, New York, active in Atlanta, Dallas. It doesn't matter if they have 1,000 members, they have 100 members, they have 5, or they have 1, he who we shall not name. What they
are. All right, so here's a little bit more on the history of the new Black Panthers. This now, and I'll play some more after the break on the hour.
Contains graphic images and racial slurs. Viewer discretion is advised. Their cry is Black Power.
Black Power.
Declaring freedom or death. Demanding an end to oppression, their call is for revolution.
Revolution is inevitable, and the only one who can stop it is God himself.
And change by any means necessary.
You want freedom? You're going to have to kill some crackers. You're going to have to kill some of their babies.
A separate nation for and by blacks.
I hate white people. Every last iota of a cracker, I hate it.
Built on a legacy forged in the 60s.
The Black Panther Party said that in order for black people to be free, the American government had to be completely reconstructed in a revolutionary way.
Today, the new Black Panther Party and other black nationalists are seeking to redefine black power in America.
All right, that's the start of a pretty interesting video that I watched the whole bit of last night, and I'll play a little bit more of you, but for you. But I mean, think about that. There's a can you imagine? And maybe the KKK is like this. I don't know. You know, I'm sure the KKK hangs around talking about killing black people. So it's not like there's not groups like this out there for whites. But I just think if the KKK showed up and blocked people from voting, those people would be cooling their heels in federal prison for 20 years. And the Obama administration did not take them seriously. Eric Holder, when he got in there, even though the case was done, think about this. This case was done. The new Black Panthers had been convicted in absentia. They didn't bother to show up to their own trial. And Eric Holder said, we are not going to go forward with this. So he refused to bring it for sentencing. And it was dismissed. So that's what this president and his people think about the new Black Panthers and Black Lives Matter. And it's obvious from all the stuff the president said about these people that that he has a lot of sympathy for Black Lives Matters, and he tends to express himself racially. You know, even though he was raised by white people in Hawaii, he spends a lot of time talking about black stuff, and he was supposed to be post-racial and post-political, and we're in a world of hurt right now, folks, because we don't have a steady hand on the tiller right now, and we need somebody to stand up and say, back off, and let's let cooler heads prevail, put down the guns. 6:59 a.m. Las Cruces AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in, and we will be back after break on the hour to continue on the fascinating history of black nationalism. And the guy that shot was a member of the New Black Panthers. Okay, so 7:06, and I do have the text machine with me. And 805-618-805-6180. And just a little bit off the beaten path here, we have a few weather stories. And we've got a story from... Well, we've got... let me see if I can find this here. We've got an NOAA, the National Weather People. Get ready for a hot, wet, and wild summer. NOAA says America has already sweated through warmest June on record. 2016 flirting with record for most billion-dollar disasters with 8. Average temperature in lower 48, 71, almost 72 degrees, 3.3 degrees above normal. Surpassing Dust Bowl record set in 1933. So, just to let you know, it's going to be a scorcher out there, and you can certainly bring up your global warming arguments for that. And, all right, so, but here's a few more weather clips for you. And this one, severe thunderstorms, the damaging wind, and large hail, and it looks like maybe a little bit of snow in the midst of all the heat down here.
Kind of looks like a winter scene there, right? In Killdeer, North Dakota. It was yesterday, though. That's July, and that's all hail you're looking at. And how about that wind damage? Blew out the back of that car window. You can see that house affected there. Well, we're going to have a couple of days of active weather that sits through the plains and then pushes into the Midwest and the Great Lakes. So today, here we go, from International Falls all the way down into parts of Kansas. That's where we'll see severe weather once again. It starts to get organized by later today. So watch this line as it advances right in the evening into Tuesday morning. Now, Tuesday, we're still looking at an active day, but the threat moves to the east. So it's more the Midwest and the Western Great Lakes that will be on tap for some severe weather. So Green Bay all the way down to Chicago and even to Peoria, Kansas City, you could all be looking at the threat of damaging winds and large hail.
And the Torcon, the tornado conditions were up to 7 in some of those places. Now, here's cold in the Northwest. Seattle, Portland, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, et cetera.
Well, let's take a look at your forecast out west. And one of the big stories we've got to cover is going to be this big trough and what it's going to do for millions of you out in the Pacific Northwest and into the Rockies, too. That cold air loft is a big difference maker, driving temperatures well below where they should be for this time of year. Places like Boise, perfect example, where the high today is going to be the coolest high temperature they've had in roughly 30 years, at least for this day. We got 23 degrees below average, Salt Lake City cool times, Redding certainly cold, San Francisco going with 68. For tomorrow, we still have the cold air out there, or at least cooler air, warming up a bit in Boise going with 77 degrees. Another big issue, well, kind of a cool feature, guys. Come on. snowfall this time of year. Yeah, look at it. In Bozeman, not so much, but when you get above 7,000 feet, there's some parts of Montana, you could get anywhere from 5 to 8 inches of snowfall. For the Tetons, Yellowstone National Park, the highest peaks, maybe anywhere from 1 to 3 inches of snow. Should be a beautiful time, a nice feature during this hot summer.
Wow, huh? Okay, so now here is a little bit more on the criticism of the El Paso police chief who said Black Lives Matter is a radical hate group. If Black Lives Matter, if the military wing of that is the new Black Panther Party, we're in trouble. We're all in trouble. Check this out. And this is from one of the local stations down there.
Greg Allen is coming under fire for a controversial comment that he made during a press conference yesterday. City leaders gathered to show their support for the Dallas police officers. When reporters asked about the Black Lives Matter movement, this is how the chief responded.
Black Lives Matter, as far as I'm concerned, is a radical hate group. And for that purpose alone, I think the leadership of this country needs to look a little bit harder at that particular group. The consequences of what we saw in Dallas is due to their efforts.
In response to that comment, U.S. Representative Beto O'Rourke tweeted this out today saying, quote, EP police chief has lost our confidence by blaming Dallas PD murders on Black Lives Matter. O'Rourke was on the city council when Greg Allen was promoted to the chief of police. And just this afternoon, a group of 12 local and state leaders sent a letter to Mayor Oscar Leeser condemning Chief Allen's comments. KFOX 14 News at 9's Adria Irahita spoke to some of those officials about that letter. She's live in the studio.
Well, Megan, when we aired Chief Allen's comments last night, it quickly spread all over social media. County officials tell me that's when they first found out and decided to write the letter. And now they're asking the city to take action.
It's the statement that's raised plenty of controversy in the midst of this week's tragedy.
Black Lives Matter, as far as I'm concerned, is a radical hate group.
El Paso Police Chief Greg Allen making this comment after a press conference on Friday when asked about a Black Lives Matter vigil taking place in downtown El Paso on Sunday. He refused to make comments during the press conference itself.
Chief, would,
hey, it's Kelly.
Okay.
Now officials are calling
it's
for
Kelly.
Action.
Kelly, this is Trump.
Hey.
Am I on the air?
No, not yet.
It's not representative of
okay,
our administrator who we are.
From LinkedIn. I heard you before.
You know, from
don't
my perspective, an apology
go ahead.
Should be a minimum requirement, but
okay, this is a
my view, that's not enough.
Multiple officials on the local, state, and national level penned a letter to El Paso Mayor Oscar Leeser and city representatives. Telling them, this is why we urge you to publicly repudiate the statement forcefully and unequivocally and hold Chief Allen accountable for damaging the public trust and bringing disrepute to our community.
He was wearing his uniform. And he was there in an official capacity. And so I think that he definitely made the wrong decision in saying that.
El Paso County Commissioner David Stout signed a letter and tells KFOX he wants to see Chief Allen take some responsibility for his actions.
I think he owes an apology to the citizens of El Paso, the residents of El Paso, to the city, to the county, to the rest of us who also represent this area.
But County Judge Veronica Escobar says she feels that's not enough.
We have a chief of police exhibiting for a group of residents. The council has to ask themselves, is this someone who can lead this department and police our community?
Definitely not. The sentiment I think that we feel here in El Paso, I don't think it's representative of the way that I feel or that the county feels. And he's a city leader.
And the Black Lives Matter vigil will take place tomorrow at 8 p.m. at San Jacinto Plaza. When we asked Chief Allen about security plans at the vigil, he refused to divulge the information. Live in studio, Adria Hita, KFOX 14, News at 9.
All right, so we've got a little bit of a problem in that you've got leaders of the police and other various groups that are fighting against the Black Lives Matter spirit. And then you've got people like the Minnesota governor. How would you like to be a cop working and putting your life on the line every single day and probably having gone through a lot of unpleasant experiences as part of your service to the public? And then there's a police shooting. And it is not determined yet who was at fault. there hasn't been a fact-finding yet. There's just one video that's out there from one angle. And the governor of the state gets up and says, if that was a white person, they wouldn't be dead. I mean, can you imagine how under fire you would feel? How under attack? How does this governor get up and not give any protection? Any, back them up till you know they're wrong, you know? And so I did some research on this guy, far, far leftist, who's married into the Rockefeller family and had run for office a number of times and finally became the governor. He's a far lefty. And so for far leftists, it's more important to push social progression, whatever you want to call it, whatever you think it is, to for example, backing up your employees. You know, how would you like to work in a business where there was an upset customer and they came back and accused you of something and the boss fired you without listening to your side? All right, here's the guy. Well, I'm not even going to get into this guy because he's just, let me get into him tomorrow. I don't even want to listen to him. He's so disgusting. Let me get back to Inside the New Black Panthers, because I think that you're going to find this interesting. A revival of not just the New Black Panthers, but black nationalism and Pan-Africanism. And really, there's a key in here too. There is a religious element which is closest to the Nation of Islam than anything else, which maybe that's another reason the president feels a little bit touched. I mean, we saw the other day on the front of a website, Obama in as an adult wearing Muslim garb. Now, you can tell me he's not a Muslim. I have no idea what he believes. Is he a Christian? He doesn't seem like one to me. He didn't go to church, but he went to church for 15 years under Reverend Wright. 20 years, 25 years, I think 22 years. So anyway, here's a little more on the New Black Panthers.
From New York, the 4th of July weekend. Members of the Harlem, Trenton, and Newark chapters of the New Black Panther Party gather on Frederick Douglass Boulevard. They are protesting racial oppression of blacks at the hands of what they consider to be the racist U.S. government. The New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense is one of the most extreme black nationalist groups in America today. In the next hour, we'll travel inside three black nationalist groups that all call themselves Panthers: the 1960s militant Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, the New Black Panther Party that has no affiliation with the original party but seeks to reinvent their concept of black power, and the socially conscious New Black Panther Nation, New Marcus Garvey Movement.
Black power! Black power!
The New Black Panther Party members see themselves as warriors aiming to liberate blacks from the captivity of white society. They hate whites, Jews, and homosexuals. They are against the government, oppose taxation and military service for blacks, and seek reparations for slavery. They want separate institutions for whites and blacks, and even a separate nation.
What's your colors be?
Red, black, and green.
Strong and militant, they declare they are ready to bring this change about by any means necessary, including violence. These New Black Panthers are calling for revolutionary political and social change.
The New Black Panther Party exists because the spirit for liberation and revolution amongst our people still exists. And we are the current generation that embodies the ultimate aspirations of a people that have suffered much here in the hills of North America.
That guy's name is Shabazz, his last name, Malik Shabazz. Shabazz, according to the Nation of Islam, is the basically one of the tribes out of, I believe it was Mecca, that came over here and became the foundation for Nation of Islam. And that was Martin Luther King's wife's name, wasn't it, that she must have changed. 719 AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450 to call in And we do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hi, my name's Marty.
Hey, Marty.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to point out that black women make up about 6% of the population in the United States, yet they account for 32% of all abortions. So Black Lives Matter, they should start there. Stop aborting their own people right out of existence. Today's population of blacks would be more than double in the United States of America if Roe versus Wade hadn't passed in 1973. That's what Margaret Sanger had in mind all along.
Well, Margaret
started the whole Planned Parenthood. I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
Well, Margaret Sanger was a racist. As a matter of fact, they were going to purify the early eugenics movement and the abortion movement came out of the same background.
Yes, sir. I didn't know you know so much about it. I thought I was the only one who knew about stuff like that in this town. And it just blows my mind. Are dreams coming true? I mean, think about that. 6% of the population of African-American women for the abortion.
Yeah.
That's it all. Why aren't they marching on the Planned Parenthood places or the abortion clinic on Loman? Where are they?
Yeah. I mean, unborn black lives don't matter. And they say that the most dangerous place for, and I've heard many black guys say this on YouTube. Sometimes I'll go in and look at various videos and they'll say the most dangerous place for a black man in the country is in his mother's mother's womb.
Yeah. Wow. Well stated.
Okay, Marty, got to take a break here. Thanks for the call. Good points. All right, folks, let's take a little break here and we will be right back to carry on the history of the new Black Panthers. Well, actually, you know what? I think I'm going to get into the history of the black nationalism. It's so fascinating. 523-1450 AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450. All right, so I'm hoping to give you an overview of black nationalism today so that you can understand the new Black Panthers and you can understand some of the claims that might seem crazy, demanding your own nation in America for one racial group, the opposite of integration. And it might sound crazy to want to go back to Africa when Africa to this day has so many extraordinary problems just feeding its people, has no functional economy in many of these states, and why would you want to go back there? But it is part of the aggrievement industry. I'm not saying the people are not sincere, but for the political players, it's tapping into the aggrievement industry, and also for people like Barack Obama and Eric Holder, I think it is a combination of political power and also personal interest. But, all right, so this guy, Marcus Garvey, is probably the most important name in the history of black nationalism. He's a fascinating character. Check this out. And this is from the History Channel.
Marcus Garvey wanted to return African Americans to Africa to create a vibrant black nation, empowered through economic independence. Although some of his goals were controversial, his crusade would inspire leaders from Malcolm X to Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela.
Garvey was certainly a controversial figure, but the concepts that we now think of as black nationalism and black pride started with Garvey's pronouncement.
Marcus Mosiah Garvey was born in St. Anne's Bay, Jamaica on August 17, 1887. Beginning as a printer's apprentice at 14, Garvey became a union organizer and later worked various jobs across Central America.
Marcus Garvey found wherever he went, black people of African heritage in particular were always on the lower stratification end of society. This had a profound impact on him. Particularly, his concern was for the uplift of African people globally.
In 1912, Garvey sailed to London, England, and took night courses at Birkbeck College. After working for a Pan-African newspaper, Garvey returned to Jamaica in 1914 and formed the United Negro Improvement Association, or UNIA.
The UNIA was about Black self-determination. It was about galvanizing the ideas of Black repatriation to the motherland, the continent of Africa. And it was extremely important in terms of getting Black people to understand self-pride, pride in one's race.
Inspired by Booker T. Washington to raise funds and start his own school, Garvey came to the United States in 1916 and in 1918 began publishing the Negro World newspaper.
Garvey was extremely outspoken. He was, some people would say, almost bombastic. He wanted to take over Africa and had elected himself as president of Africa without consulting the Africans, unfortunately.
Determined to achieve economic independence for African Americans, Garvey launched the Negroes Factories Association in 1919 and a shipping company called the Black Star Line, which he planned to use to transport passengers back to Africa.
Garvey was a great organizer, but unfortunately not a great businessman. During the time that Garvey and the UNIA were trying to launch the Black Star Line, they solicited funds from investors for stock options through the mail. And this resulted later on in allegations of mail fraud, and Garvey was convicted and sent to prison.
After serving 5 years in prison, Garvey was deported. He eventually moved to London, and in 1938, he supported the Greater Liberia Act, created by known white supremacist Senator Theodore Bilbo from Mississippi.
Marcus Garvey's association with Senator Bilbo is related more on a practical level rather than an intellectual like for each other. Marcus Garvey's attempt to help Africans in America leave and go to Africa fell in line with some aspects of KKK philosophy.
All right, and we know that the early KKK were, what's a democratic movement? Democratic Party movement. All right. So here is, let's just say that if they had relocated all of the Black people from America back to Liberia, what would be the outcome? Settlement of freed slaves from the U.S. is what is today Liberia, began Liberia in 1822. By 1847, the Americo-Liberians, and this is from the CIA fact book, which is a great source to find out about other countries. The Americo-Liberians were able to establish a republic. And, okay, so let's look at the economy. Liberia is a low-income country that relies heavily on foreign assistance. It is richly endowed with water, mineral resources, forests, and a climate favorable to agriculture. Its principal exports are iron ore, rubber, gold, and timber. During the early 1990s and the 2000 civil war and government mismanagement destroyed much of Liberia's economy, especially infrastructure in and around the capital. And this is the story of all of the African nations, almost without example, is these kind of, you get a despot in, a tyrant, and then there is some sort of a coup. And, you know, so I would say most American Blacks are lucky they didn't end up over there. We'll take a break and come back. I have a statement from your beloved leader Hillary Clinton on Black, what it means to be Black. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in at 805-6180. And today we're enjoying Wes Montgomery, the greatest jazz guitarist of his generation. All right. In case you're wondering what Hillary had to say about these goings on, here she goes. I want white people to understand how African Americans feel every day. Hillary Clinton, epic genius.
I want white people to understand how African Americans feel every day. The anxiety and fear, particularly sending off their children, particularly young men, not knowing what's going to happen to them. I want people to put themselves in the shoes of police officers and their families who get up every day and go off and do a very dangerous job.
Can you say pander? All right, let's Sheriff David Clark claiming, and he's from, I think, Wisconsin. He's saying that Obama has started a war against cops.
You know, the truth is that people can say.
This is from August 29th before the shooting.
Do whatever they want. This is America. But without leadership, you know, there isn't going to be any different, you know, reaction. More people seem to be emboldened by this kind of thing.
Right. And that's why I said that the president of the United States started this war on police. Look, and I know what you mean, Judge, by that, but it's not absolute. You can't say anything you want in the United States of America. You cannot threaten people's lives. You can't call for the killing of people like we're seeing from some of these things. That is not First Amendment protection. That is protected. That is filth. That is slime. And, you know, there are some law enforcement implications that can be done with the Department of Justice and with state's attorney's offices across the United States. I love the First Amendment. I love freedom of speech. You are not free to threaten my life or anybody else's.
All right. Sheriff David Clark, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
And here's a little bit more from that same guy. He's very, very much an outspoken critic of the sheriff. The head of the National Police Association, one of them at least, has harshly criticized the president for his statements that have seemed to be against cops.
Divisiveness that has been caused by President Barack Obama and some of these other liberals on the left who specialize in division. This war, fictitious war on women. They pit the races against each other. Remember the rich and the poor, the one percenters. That's what they specialize in. They want to keep people at each other's throats so that they can maintain this chaotic state that we're in right now, and then threatens our institutions like it is the institution of policing in America, our courts, and some of those things. And then once those institutions are destroyed, then they can insert their socialist agenda. That's a true goal here. And like I said, all people have to do is go back and look at the same situations back in the 60s, and you're going to find it. Another thing Jesse Jackson said yesterday, he talked about the civil rights struggle that continues today. I'm here to tell you, and I'm living proof, there's no civil rights struggle in the United States anymore. We took care of that. There are some instances that pop up from time to time, and I'll tell you what, we have things in place that will shut that sort of stuff down. What he's talking about is when blacks were denied the right to vote. Blacks are not denied the right to vote. When blacks couldn't sit at a counter in a white restaurant, you know, you had your coloreds only and whites only. That was the civil rights struggle that no longer exists in the United States. That needs to end. That stuff, just that's the kind of stuff that keeps this division going. And once white people acknowledge that and start pushing back against that, that's when I think we'll all be better off. But right now, everybody's walking around on eggshells. They're afraid to say anything about this hate group, Black Lives Matter. They're afraid to say anything about support for police in a public public manner, a public way, I should say. And until that starts to happen, I'm talking about pushback.
Right.
Then, you know, we'll be a lot better off as a country.
All right. So there is, let me come back and play a little bit for you on the difference between the Black nationalism and Pan-Africanism. Kelly O'Connell, 740, trying to squeeze as much info as I can into one show for you today so you can kind of think about what's going on. Black Lives Matter is kind of the political expression or the social media expression of this political, religious, paramilitary group, the New Black Panthers, who have called for many, many times for police to be killed. And the president had them guilty of voter fraud, and he let them off. Of course, it was his election that they helped with. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450 to call in. All right, just looking at the philosophy of Black Lives Matter, according to its own website, incorporates those people on the margins of Black freedom movements. And so Black Lives Matter is, quote, a unique contribution that goes beyond extrajudicial killings of Black people by police and vigilantes and embracing intersectionality. Black Lives Matter affirms the lives of Black, queer, and trans folk, disabled, Black, and undocumented folks with records, women and all Black lives along the gender spectrum. So it is, it's a huge slice of the politically correct church, if you will. And the political correctness came out of this group of German philosophers or German professors who wanted to inject Marxism into the American society, realizing that the Americans were happy in a capitalist society and therefore would never overthrow it. And these professors had to figure out a new way to get it in here. So it came out of the Frankfurt School. But don't overlook the fact that Black Lives Matter is a socialist and a Marxist group. And so the idea that, for example, in the new Black Panthers or Black nationalism, that they want reparations, pretty obvious, you know. They want to be given money. They want to be given land. They want to be given states. Here is Dr. Umar Johnson on Black nationalism versus Pan-African nationalism.
Here's the thing, and this is also a significant difference between the Garveyite school of Pan-Africanism. Most Pan-Africanists in general, in most other Black nationalist ideologies, if you look at the Black socialist platform, if you look at the Uhuru movement, International Democratic People's Uhuru movement, the African Socialist Party, if you look at the Nation of Islam, they believe that we should force America to give us some states in this country so we can forge a Black republic of our own, a Black nation. From the Pan-Africanist perspective, from the Garveyite perspective, we see that as a big mistake. This is why Garvey said that the future of the Black man outside of Africa spells ruin and disaster. Now, if you know anything about Black history in this country, ever we built up Black power, Rosewood, Florida, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Charleston, South Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina, and the list goes on and on. We had at least 24 different Black Wall Streets. Every time we built Black power politically and economically, it was destroyed by white folk with the help of the government. So for organizations who would argue that we could build a Black nation amongst our enemy, look at this now. You're 40 million amongst 400 million. And you're going to build, they're going to give you five states. So let's say they give us, what, Texas, Mississippi, Arkansas, these five states, five, six, whatever. So you got Black folks in the middle of the United States surrounded by white folks on all four sides. How in the hell, I said possibly operate as an independent nation surrounded by your enemy on all four sides. It's a ridiculous concept from the Pan-Africanist perspective. So as Garveyites, we never argue, let's get America to give us some states and build a country here. That's ridiculous. First of all, that's not even independent. How can you be independent in land given to you by your oppressor and you're surrounded by your oppressor? That's not no damn freedom. That's not freedom. So,
all right. So, there is this Pan-Africanism that wants people sent back to Africa. I don't hear that as much in the recordings of these people that I've listened to. It's more of reparations, and they do want, I mean, if you could imagine all of the black people being forced. What about the black people that don't want to move to Georgia or Texas or whatever? But they want reparations. They want to be paid back for the experience of their forebears being slaves and the impact. Now, here is Malcolm X on black nationalism. And when you hear Malcolm X talk, don't be surprised if you hear a cadence like Obama's, because I believe that Obama, this is one of his main influences in terms of politics and speaking style. Check this out.
The political philosophy of black nationalism only means that the black man should control the politics and the politicians in his own community. The time when white people can come in our community and get us to vote for them so that they can be our political leaders and tell us what to do and what not to do is long gone. By the same token, the time when that same white man, knowing that your eyes are too far open, can send another Negro into the community, get you and me to support him so he can use him to lead us astray, those days are long gone. So the political philosophy of black nationalism only means that we will have to carry on a program, a political program of re-education to open our people's eyes, make us become more politically conscious, politically mature. And then we will, whenever we get ready to cast our ballot, that ballot will be cast for a man of the community who has the good of the community at heart. And the economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a black store in a white community. White man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And you don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a rundown community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar.
All right, so that is Malcolm X. Now, don't forget that Malcolm X came up into the Nation of Islam movement. The Nation of Islam comes out of Detroit. It is started by Wallace Fard, who was apparently a white guy, according to the pictures that they had of him. But he claimed that God was black. And they say that he started it in part so that he could sell clothes from the Middle East. But in any event, then you've got Elijah Muhammad who takes over. And, you know, the Nation of Islam is kind of has some strange beliefs, one of which is they believe that there's a mothership flying around the earth at all times, getting ready to come back and seek revenge on white people. And they don't believe that white people can be saved because their souls are defective. And what happens is that Malcolm X goes to Mecca to do his pilgrimage, and he realizes that Islam is much broader than just black people. And he has this kind of religious epiphany, you know, and he becomes a regular Muslim instead of a Nation of Islam. And he changed his views. I think that he became less racial in his thinking. And this is towards the very end of his life. So but he was an interesting guy. He had a great speaking style. And the first time that I really listened to him after Obama came into office, I'm like, wow, this, you know, I don't think you could hear it as much in that particular clip. But I think Obama, some people claim that guy is Obama's father, which I don't know if there's any evidence that could possibly lead in that direction, but that he looks somewhat like Malcolm X. Other people think that his father was this poet, Franklin Davis. But in any event, black nationalism became this huge movement, and in the 60s as part of the civil rights movement. And gradually lost steam as the United States became less and less racist or less and less racial in terms of its laws and stuff. And now it's made a comeback, and it is, you know, these new Black Panthers are black nationalists, and they're very violent. And this kid had just been in, this guy that went on this shooting spree had just been in there for 6 months, but the same group of people had threatened to kill those who had led to the death of Sandra, what's her face, the lady that died in jail down in Texas. So, all right, so a text: if there was a will to get rid of black on black crime, it could be done. The will is to put that filter on rhetoric lens and develop the narrative that justice for blacks is dead in our country. Obama is not only a consummate coward, he's a consummate subversive. The radical blacks want their own state badly enough, they'll have to fight for it. And, all right. So, anyway, that is, that is kind of a summary. I wanted to give you guys, anybody who was willing to kind of sit through the 2 hours, kind of a tour through the black nationalist movement, including Pan-Africanism, the history behind the new Black Panthers and the Black Panthers, and then the people behind Black Lives Matter, which are just community organizers. Now, a community organizer, a follower of the guy that wrote Rules for Radicals, Alinsky, they just want to divide and you know, conquer. They're looking to overwhelm the social justice system, the social welfare, and that's one of the things they want to do. But they're also becoming increasingly, new Black Panthers are militarized. So supposedly they're fighting for their own nation. Anyway, thanks for listening into the Kelly O'Connell Show at about 7:59. Interesting days we're living in. I'll take you out with some Wes Montgomery, one of the greatest jazz albums of all time, the incredible jazz guitar. And we'll meet you back in 22 hours. Have a great day, and talk to you later. Ciao.